Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, September 18th, 2012, and I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. This evening, we're bringing a few more chapters out of Lavendar's vault, and the topics are music of the spheres, flower essences, color harmonics, and taking your power. Woven into these chapters is also some information about Atlantis, some of which was also included in our shows about Atlantis. And Lavendar gave me the honor of presenting these chapters for you this evening, so thank you, Lavendar. At the top of the show, we'll have our Starseed News segment with Anastasia, bringing current events of interest to Starseed and sharing some emails sent to us from around the globe. We want to thank Chris for hosting the switchboard this evening, and we invite you to call in with questions or comments tonight. And the number is 917-889-8292. And remember to press 1 on your keypad so we know you want to come on the air. If you like our show, we encourage you to click follow on our show page. You'll get our show notices, and it'll help promote our show and guests. And then remember to tell a few friends about us. For our new listeners, and we get new listeners every week, our main site is starseedhotline.com, where we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our vault of knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation. We have also a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. We'd also like to thank Rose, Anastasia, and Sahar for their continuing great work and dedication on behalf of our Starseed forum. You can also find us on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. And we'll get started in just a moment, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings and your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone session available with Lavendar, Anastasia, or myself. If you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by getting your solar return timing. And please allow 2 weeks, at least ahead of time, to make sure that you do get it in time. And now I'd like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Anastasia. Welcome, ladies.
Lavendar here, and I'm really anxious to hear the news, Anastasia, so
Hello, take it away. Good evening,
everybody.
Hi, Lavendar. Hi, Arielle.
Hello,
Starseed listeners. We have a really big surprise for you all tonight. So for our I am loving this, gals. Everybody, well, we're going to start out with our emails, and then we're going to go on to our meat and potato news. You know, you have to eat your peas and spinach and the main course first, and then we're going to get to dessert. And that's the fun part. So anyway, I just want to welcome everybody to tonight's show, and I only have a couple of emails that we have time to share tonight, and so I'm going to start out by thanking Audrey for writing to me. Now, this is just a really cool story, and she says, "Hi, Anastasia." She says, "I hope you're doing well. Things in Missouri are good." She said the skies have been cloudy, so she hasn't been able to do much sky watching. She's kind of my local sky watcher, Audrey, thank you. But she was emailing to let us all know something. She said that she has an iPhone 4GS, which includes Siri. And she says, I'm going to quote this now. She said, "I use her on my phone quite a bit when I'm driving and need to go hands-free. I mostly request her to play certain songs off the built-in iPod. Anyway, tonight I asked her to play a song, and she misunderstood me, which for some strange reason made me ask her what her favorite music is, to which she very promptly replied that she enjoys the music of the spheres. Not really thinking about it, I just had her play one of my show tunes, and I continued home. Once I got home and got settled, I checked my email and had the Starseed Hotline show announcement in my inbox. And to my incredible surprise, the music of the spheres was mentioned. I'm just really shocked by this synchronicity. and she was beyond excited to hear tonight's program. Said she had to tune into the archives because of her work schedule. But she was that was an amazing synchronicity, and she wanted to share that with us.
Wow.
And isn't that cute? And
yeah.
From Andrea, who wrote to both you and Lavendar, she wanted to thank you for the Starseed confirmation and for the Stargate crystals that Lavendar sent her. And she wants us to share this. So she said that both things arrived on the same day. All kinds of coincidences and synchronicities go with our work, doesn't it, ladies?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she recognized that that was no coincidence. She said that she felt incredible energy from these crystals. It was so burning hot. And she had amazing experiences with them. And she said that was also remarkable was that on the same day she received an email of ley lines and a meditation that is mentioned in being on top of this ley line pyramid 30 miles from her home, and she knew that some crystals had to be placed there. And she said that another thing, that in July and August she had a brown spot between her thumb and finger, and she thought, well, this is a nice liver spot. What is it? Where does it come from? And she said, then I listened to your show and thought, okay, it can't be the shot because of the location. I thought it's supposed to be on the top of the thumb, she said. But a week ago, I listened to another show, I guess with Dr. Meg, and heard that the location is between the thumb and finger. And she said, I looked at my spot, and it was gone. She said, weird and wonderful. And she sends her love to the two of you.
Ah.
So, okay, so we want to thank all of our Starseed listeners so much for sharing your beautiful stories and your beautiful hearts. And we love you right back, and just keep them coming. Now we need to start into tonight's news because we've got to get to that dessert. So I want to start talking about a little bit of weather. Do you know that we've had some pretty severe weather in certain places around the world? But I'll get to that in a second. Last week I mentioned the sky sounds that were being heard in West Seattle.
Uh-huh.
Well, now out of the Hindustan Times, heavy rains have been reported in that part of the world, along with very loud sounds that are on the rise, causing concern among the population. Seismologists don't know what's causing it, but the people have been running out of their houses, hearing loud sounds like tremors in the sky. And so it's going on still, you know, from West Seattle now to Hindustan. So I want my listeners, our listeners out there, to just keep listening, and if you hear anything, be sure to let me know. I have a little piece to share with you tonight about CERN. We've talked about CERN before. So we're going to move from the natural world and go into a lab where science continues to tinker with some very powerful cosmic forces. What they've done at CERN is that they've managed to create the highest temperature, mass that humanity has ever imagined. And CERN is the European Physics Lab responsible for discovering that Higgs boson particle just last month, the so-called God particle. And they claim to have scored another major achievement in the realm of physics. They have created a quark gluon plasma that clocks in at a balmy 5.5 trillion degrees. And the way they have managed to create this physics mystic mix is that they have smashed two lead atoms together. And so they believe that this approximates the state of the universe immediately after the Big Bang. So, man, they're messing with some pretty big stuff right here on Earth. And I just wanted to pass that along. I kind of like to keep an eye on those guys, okay, just so everybody knows about that. Well, remember last week we talked about Jupiter being hit by an asteroid or a comet?
Right.
I just want to update on that. New photos have come out of the impact site on the Jupiter surface. You know, Jupiter is just, it's absolutely enormous. You put the Earth up next to it and it just looks like, what would it be? Maybe a marble compared to a basketball? That might be an exaggeration.
I was thinking more like a BB.
Not by
basketball.
Right. But, I mean, it's really huge.
It is.
And the impact site, although NASA is downplaying it, they're claiming that, well, it was probably just a very small thing because there was no dust that rose from the surface, which normally occurs. So they're claiming that, well, it was a small thing. Yeah, it made that huge explosion, right? But as you're looking at the images of the photo where the impact site was, and if you put a picture of the Earth up next to Jupiter, the impact site appears to be as large as the planet Earth. So anyway, I feel like it's very possible that NASA is downplaying that because, or perhaps, attendant to a lot of fire in the sky and meteor things that are happening right here on the world, on this planet. There were some daytime fireballs that they thought started some ground fires in British Columbia, and they're looking into it now. It's in the area of Peachland, so any of you from British Columbia that have seen this or seen this meteorite coming out of the sky, I'd like to hear from you. They say they really don't know what caused the wildfires, but interestingly enough, the fire started at the same time. Approximately, people saw fiery streaks in the sky that landed. They felt landed or hit ground, and the wildfire started about that time. And if you will recall, a few months back during the Colorado wildfires, people had reported meteors coming down from the sky, and they actually grounded air tankers at that time. So this is not uncommon, and if one follows the threads, it appears to be happening quite a bit. There was another fire in that same area, in the area of Falkland, that started about the same time as the one in Peachland, and we need to ask if maybe that was connected to the same group of balls of fire with flaming tails that were coming down from the sky at the same time. So anyway, this is something that we need to be mindful of because there's a lot of meteor activity in the sky. In fact, over southwestern U.S., near Phoenix, a huge number of people, maybe some of our listeners saw this, witnessed a trail left in the sky by an incoming meteor. There's photographs of it all over the Internet. Now, in fact, they saw it actually in California, Nevada, Utah, New Mexico, Colorado, all saw this luminescent trail in the sky. Now, the Army claims that they had test-fired a rocket missile at 5:30 in the morning at local time on the 13th of September, but their stories are very, very interesting because the Associated Press first reported, now mind you, that a lot of people thought this was a fireball, and the news that came out later said it was a missile launch. But what's interesting about the missile launch story is that the Army claims that it was launched from Fort Wingate near Gallup, New Mexico, but actually Fort Wingate was shut down in 1993. And the Associated Press stories that I read were completely contradictory. I'll give you an example quickly of one that says that the explosion in the sky, of course, was a normal separation of the first and second stages of an unarmed Juno ballistic missile that was fired at 6:30 a.m. Mountain Time from Fort Wingate near Gallup, New Mexico. And this was the Army's statement, as reported by the Associated Press. Another Associated Press story says, the Juno missile was targeted by advanced versions of the Patriot missile fired from White Sands, a completely different story, about 350 miles away as part of a test. Two of the missiles were fired and hit the incoming Juno missile. Okay, that was their claim. They claimed that Patriot missiles shot another missile out of the sky and it was not a meteor. But what's so odd about that is still another Associated Press account, which says this. This was the 14th missile launched from the Fort Wingate, New Mexico area since the mid-90s. Depending on the sunlight, it's visible at times. The rising sun backlit the Juno missile's contrail and provided a spectacular morning sight for early risers across the region. The winds in the various layers of atmosphere skewed the missile contrail, creating a swirly cloud pattern seen in the sky. Then this is what it says. The missile then returned to base. Well, returned to base, not only does that contradict the story about the two Patriot interceptor missiles hitting the Juno rocket, it's completely and physically impossible because rockets and missiles do not return to base. So this is just something for all of you to think about, the official story versus what people think it might be. And when one compares the photographs of this blazing, incredibly beautiful fluorescent tail in the sky with other affirmed meteors, looks the same to me. So that's something to think about. Because a meteor crashed into a house in Honduras. And this happened on the 31st of August, and that was confirmed. And so, there's been more than one of those. So anyway, there's a lot of stuff happening in the sky and a lot of things coming down. Perhaps some of it is space junk, But certainly, again, there's a lot of evidence that it is fireballs or meteors. Okay? So,
mm-hmm.
Now, in the Salton Sea, in, along the Salton Sea in California, they're having a problem with a terrible smell. Thousands of dead tilapia fish are washing ashore. And while they say they don't know what is causing that, there is some speculation out there that this could be a release of volcanic gases as a result of fissures opening up around the valley. Anyone out there in that area that has any information about this that can cast some light on this, I'd appreciate hearing from you. Okay, so you guys all got through your spinach and your peas and all the helpful stuff, and now the dessert. This is great. This is from the New York Times. You need to know that I read all these sources, papers all around the world regularly, and have my different papers that I look at every morning and news releases and stuff. But this was something that just had to be shared with you all tonight. So I'm gonna share a lot of it with you right in context, reading it from the New York Times. The article is titled, "A Faded Piece of Papyrus Refers to Jesus' Wife."
Oh,
and
my
this
God.
This is out of Cambridge, Massachusetts. And it says, a historian of early Christianity at Harvard Divinity School, that's about as conventional as it gets, people, has identified a scrap of papyrus that she says was written in Coptic in the 4th century and contains a phrase never seen in any piece of scripture. Quote, "Jesus said to them, 'My wife,'" end quote. The faded papyrus fragment is smaller than a business card, with 8 lines on one side in black ink legible under a magnifying glass. Just below the line about Jesus having a wife, the papyrus includes a second provocative clause that purportedly says, "She will able to be my disciple." The finding was made public in Rome on Tuesday at an international meeting of Coptic scholars by Karen L. King, an historian who has published several books about new gospel discoveries and is the first woman to hold the nation's oldest endowed chair, the Hollis Professor of Divinity. So this woman is a well-respected scholar. And I'm going to go on and read the rest of this. The provenance of the papyrus fragment is a mystery, and its owner has asked to remain anonymous. Until Tuesday, Dr. King had shown the fragment to only a small circle of experts in papyrology and Coptic linguistics, who concluded that it is most likely not a forgery. But she and her collaborators say they are eager for more scholars to weigh in and perhaps upend their conclusions. This is how scholars talk. Dr. King first learned about what she calls the Gospel of Jesus' Wife when she received an email in 2010 from a private collector who asked her to translate it. Dr. King, who's 58 years old, specializes in Coptic literature, has written books on the Gospel of Judas, the Gospel of Mary Magdalene, and Gnosticism, and women in antiquity. Even with many questions unsettled, the discovery could reignite the debate over whether Jesus was married, whether Mary Magdalene was his wife, and whether he had a female disciple. These debates date to the early centuries of Christianity, scholars say, but they are very relevant today when global Christianity is roiling over the place of women in the ministry and the boundaries of marriage. The discussion is particularly animated in the Roman Catholic Church, where despite calls for change, the Vatican has reiterated the teaching that the priesthood cannot be open to women and married men because of the model set by Jesus. Dr. King showed the papyrus fragment encased in glass to reporters from the New York Times, the Boston Globe, and Harvard Magazine in her garret office in the tower at Harvard Divinity School last Thursday. She left the next day for Rome to deliver her paper on the find on Tuesday at the International Congress of Coptic Studies. She repeatedly cautioned that this fragment should not be taken as proof that Jesus, the historical person, was actually married. The text was probably written centuries after Jesus lived, and all other early, historically reliable Christian literature is silent on the question, she said. But the discovery is exciting because it is the first known statement from antiquity that refers to Jesus speaking of a wife. It provides further evidence that there was an active discussion among early Christians about whether Jesus was celibate or married and which path his followers should choose. This fragment suggests that some early Christians had a tradition that Jesus was married, Dr. King said. There was, we already know, a controversy in the second century over whether Jesus was married, caught up with a debate about whether Christians should marry and have sex. Now, the owner of this manuscript, who has a collection of Greek, Coptic, and Arabic papyri, is not willing to be identified by name, nationality, or location because he said he doesn't want to be hounded by people who want to buy this. So when, where, or how the fragment was discovered is unknown. The collector acquired it in a batch of papyri in 1977 from a previous German owner. Interesting. It came with a handwritten note in German that names Professor of Egyptology in Berlin, now deceased, and citing him, calling the fragment the sole example of a text in which Jesus claims a wife. The owner carried the fragment to the Divinity School, like I said, in 2011, and left it with Dr. King. Now, she said she was suspicious at first, but she thought it looked promising, so she set out to explore it. And 3 months later, she took the fragment to New York to show to colleagues, and they examined it. And they came to the agreement. Two of them actually disputed it. One agreed that it was authentic. And they decided, actually, and then they got to a consensus, whatever. One person said it would be impossible to forge. They examined it under sharp magnification. Now, it's very small. It was only 4 by 8 centimeters. So that's very, very tiny, about maybe 2 by 4 inches. Okay, the lettering was splotchy and uneven, the hand of an amateur, but not unusual for the time period when many Christians were poor and persecuted, so they were not educated. It was written in Coptic, an Egyptian language that uses Greek characters, and more precisely in Sahidic Coptic, which is a dialect from southern Egypt. And so they decided that a forger would have to be expert in Coptic grammar, handwriting, and ideas. And most forgeries that they've seen are nothing more than gibberish. And he asked the question, one of these experts asked, if it were a forgery intended to cause a sensation or to make someone rich, why in the world would it have lain in obscurity for so many years? And the conclusion was, this man, by the way, his name is Dr. Bagnall, who evaluated this, he said, it's hard to construct a scenario that is at all plausible in which somebody fakes something like this. The world is really not crawling with crooked papyrologists. And so the piece was torn into a rough triangle. It looks like the document is missing its adjoining text on the left, right, top, and bottom. And they figure that it's most likely the work of a dealer who divided the manuscript up to maximize his profit. So even though much of the context is missing, they're struck by the phrases in the fragment like, my mother gave to me life, and Mary is worthy of it, which resemble snippets from the Gospels of Thomas and Mary. And experts believe those were written in the late 2nd century, translated into Coptic. They surmise that this fragment is also copied from a 2nd century Greek text. And the meaning of the words, my wife, is beyond question, according to these scholars. These words can mean nothing else. And let's see, they haven't had it carbon tested. It would put it into risk. It's too small. But they're going to have it tested by spectroscopy, which could roughly determine the age by chemical composition. And let's see here.
Wow.
The owner has offered to donate the papyrus to Harvard if the university buys a substantial part of his collection. And she said that Harvard is considering that. She's going to push him to come forward in a part to avoid stoking conspiracy theories. Now, the notion that Jesus had a wife was the central, quote-unquote, conceit of the bestseller and movie The Da Vinci Code. And Dr. King says, oh, no, I don't want anything to do with that. She said, don't say that this proved it. Dan Brown is right. And yet, this is just how scholars talk. If you'll notice in this article, there's a bit of Hegelian dialectic going on. They say something on one hand and then say something on the other. So this is just what scholars do because they think they have to always play the devil's advocate or never come down on an opinion. Now, it is an early analysis, but It is absolutely fascinating, thrilling, and a very exciting, a very, very big discovery. Particularly, don't you think, at this time in our history and what's going on, the changes that are coming, the need for truth to come out. It's just one of those other very important things, I think, that's come to surface at the right time. Isn't that exciting, everybody? Do you have any questions?
Oh, I got chills.
Isn't that great?
I just started seeing faces of people, and it's going to take organized academia quite some time. As you said, you know, they're always hedging their bets, and they don't want to go too far out on a limb, because in that world, credibility and your peers
Absolutely. Will
jump all over you.
Yeah, they would crucify you. Pardon the. That's right.
There is a lot of competition. Excuse me. There's a lot of competition in academia, and you have to be careful that you don't go too far, because they'll jump all over you. Just because of the way that. And I remember when Kathleen McGowan was on our show, she said that that there is very little truth in academia, because they just go by the physical evidence, like, you know, pieces of paper, which could have been one way or the other way. But when you go and you talk to the people, like she did in southern France, with the oral traditions handed down from generations and generations,
uh-huh.
They have no doubt, and
Absolutely.
They don't care. They don't care whether academia puts their stamp of approval on it or not.
Absolutely.
Great indication of the turning of the tides.
It is. It's very exciting, and it just makes you feel really good that the truth's starting to come out. And I grieve that, you know, there's pieces of that manuscript and things that are lost to us, but they are obviously, you know, going to return. Things are being recovered. But we can't look to history for accuracy per se, because, you know, history is written by victors and by
exactly.
those who, you know, who have an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So this little tiny piece of paper is enough to raise suspicion and, I think, rock Christendom and make the rest of us smile. So,
well,
anyway,
Anastasia, it's Lavendar. Would you please email me that? I'd like to send that to Kathleen McGowan in case she hasn't seen it.
I absolutely will. And for the rest of you, just go onto your computer, get on the NewYorkTimes.com. It's right on New York Times today. But yes, Lavendar, of course I'll email it to you.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. So that's it from yours truly tonight, and I can't wait to hear the rest of the show. I'm going to talk about music of the spheres, and that's going to be great.
This is Lavendar, and
plus more.
Just as you were talking about this article that came out, I ran and got my mountain astrologer, and Chris had asked me if I would say something about the Uranus-Pluto square that's happening. So I got this article, and I just wanted to comment on what you just got through reading, because it says that archaeology finds are going to be major during this period of time with Uranus square Pluto.
Wow.
Yeah, and so, in fact, just let me go ahead and talk about the last time that Uranus and Pluto squared. Well, first of all, Uranus is in Aries at 7 degrees, and Pluto is at Capricorn at 7 degrees. Now, yesterday, Pluto made a station. It went direct yesterday, so there was this extra punch in the sky. And, of course, we've seen what's been happening in the Middle East. But the last time this happened was in the 60s. It was the rise of people power. It was the time when we saw civil rights, women's liberation, gay liberation, environmental movements, the songs from the Beatles, Bob Dylan, television was awakening with the Twilight Zone, the Outer Limits, and Star Trek. So when you think about what happened in the 60s, and now here it is again. It's like, oh my goodness, what do you think could possibly be happening? So as I thumb through this article, I just want to mention a couple of things that, like, back in the 60s, they got that first picture of Bigfoot. Well, you know, they've been examining that footage, and they had a special on the television show this week sometime about it. And it's like, oh, I guess maybe Bigfoot's coming back with this Uranus-Pluto square. There's a lot of activity happening with it. And while this has already been leading to fiery clashes with individuals and nations and political parties and religious groups, even genders, it can also give rise to extraordinary creative breakthroughs. Carrying out metaphor a bit further, think of how some countries like Iceland have learned how to harness the steam energy from volcano vents toward peaceful ends. Similarly, the planetary energies we're facing now can serve as potent fuel for important artistic creations, spiritual teachings, social reforms, new inventions, and discoveries. And to mention only one example, think about how writer Herman Melville composed one of the greatest books of all time, Moby Dick, right in the midst of the powerful alignment between Uranus and Pluto in the early 1850s. So, you know, it's like, okay, it happened in the 60s. It happens, you know, just ever so often. But when it does, it completely gives people the freedom of expression. It's a freedom energy. Uranus, you know, comes like the quickening, and Pluto blows it up with great power. So, and today, of all day, well, yesterday actually, it was seven degrees, which is the square. It will be 7 degrees exactly all the rest of this next month, and it will be an orb all of October. And it relieves itself, I believe, about a week before the election for just a momentary flash, and then it comes back again. So we've got some very, very exciting things about to happen in science. And in this article, it did talk about archaeology big time, about all the different things that can be discovered. And so I've been in my sessions with people. Something starts happening sometimes in my brain. I just start seeing these archaeology digs in the middle of a session with someone, and I keep wondering if they should go and dig something up, or maybe they were responsible for it, or maybe they're just part of the global group mind that's going to be excited when these things are actually coming about. Sometimes I don't know how to interpret some of the pictures that I see.
Well, that's just absolutely incredible. And number 1, 2, and 3, you are already correct, because I have been noticing in the science magazines that I read that they are uncovering so many amazing archaeological things. And I've just got to send you these articles. I just haven't had time to cover everything. They found some pyramids in Italy, Etruscan pyramids. They just unearthed a 1,500-year-old Jewish town in southern Israel. They found an enormous Roman mosaic under a farmer's field. They're finding Ice Age art. They're finding all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's just an explosion of archaeological discoveries going on right now. So I will send you some of these links, Lavendar, because you have predicted what's going on. And I've just noticed it recently. In the last, perhaps, month, I've just noticed it escalating. So I'll be sure and send these to you. But it sounds like we are really in for an amazing time. That's exciting stuff.
Well, and as I watch what's happening in the Middle East, you know, it's not so much about that video that ticked everybody off. It's about that people are in their bloodlines. They're just tired of being repressed. Now, you know, in the spring when they had that big awakening, it just woke them up, but it didn't give them anything. I mean, it was like, okay, you're awake now. Now what? And so when it came back again and hit them again, they went, okay, we're awake and we're not happy. And we're not happy because we don't know why we're not happy. Let's just go burn something. You know, it's like they're just all running around frustrated. They know that something better is out there, and they just want to find blame with the United States. And you know, it's like it's activating not only in the Middle East. I'm noticing this is happening all over the world. If you look at there's a map that you can go to. I don't have the site in front of me, but it shows where all the unrest is in the world at any given time. And it's like explosions are happening in South America, in Africa, Indonesia, I mean, everywhere. And it seems to happen in these new moon and full moon cycles, I'm noticing that especially on the full moons, they erupt. They start their build up on a new moon, and by the full moon, they've just gone beyond themselves. So now that Uranus and Pluto are both at 7 degrees right now in a square, 90 degrees, then it's like the major stress point is happening. So I'm really looking for more earthquakes and volcanoes to be set off, probably within the next 7 or 8 days.
Wow. Well, we're going to watch that.
Anything that's holding any kind of pressure,
mm-hmm.
when Uranus and Pluto are involved,
mm-hmm.
Pressure from restriction, pressure from physical stresses building up, in a natural way, to interpersonal relationships, anything that you've been trying to keep a lid on, forget it. There's just an explosion as people's, it's a purging. If you're holding on to something that's no good for you, no matter how you try to hold on to it, Uranus comes along combined with Pluto, and it just explodes. And it's a good thing.
One more thing, the writers and directors of the movie Matrix and then V for Vendetta, they were born with Uranus square Pluto, and look what they started.
Well, that's just fascinating. Now,
wow.
That's really something. Wow.
Yeah.
Astrology is such a great tracking tool, and you don't have to believe in it. Frequencies don't lie.
Right. Exactly.
And then they people, and when in the chapters that we're going to be going to next, it's about harmonics, and it all just kind of fall into place. Harmonics.
And the motto of really both of the films was the people should not fear their government; the government should fear its people. That was their whole message.
Good.
Well,
that's
encouraging. I mean, that's how it should be. So
yeah,
looks like the board is being set. The board is being set.
That's right. Well, are we ready to bring the chapters out of the vault?
Yes, we are. Go ahead.
Okay, then. We will be starting with the chapter on Music of the Spheres.
Well, tonight we're bringing more chapters out of Lavendar's vault, and I have the pleasure of being the one to present it. The subjects are Music of the Spheres, Flower Essences, Color Harmonics, and Taking Your Power. This information came in the form of a transmission to Lavendar from a Pleiadian commander named Navitar. The first one is dated April 4th, 1987, on the island of Aruba, and the subject is Music of the Spheres. One of the reasons that we have music on Earth is because in the making of creation everywhere, there are harmonics that come together and blend in the Creator's energy fields. It is this orchestration of harmonics that brings forth life on every level. Harmonics can be used for creative or destructive measures concerning the use of music. As man's consciousness changes on the planet, so does the music that he composes as well. At higher levels of awareness, the music of the spheres can be heard and felt. Many just feel it and never hear it in their consciousness, which is why some composers rely heavily on alcohol and drugs to receive glimpses of the music of the spheres. The frustration of trying to bring back to Earth their experiences on these celestial levels usually contributes to the mental and nervous breakdowns of many talented musicians. Music can calm and soothe the soul. Some magnificent works have been delivered by that great conductor of the sky over many centuries. Masters from other planets decided to come to Earth to bring music to the people, and it is through their efforts and their unselfish love nature that music has been refined into co-creator space. It has saddened some departed masters, not saddened in the earth sense, but saddened in a galactic sense, that some music has been devised to break the will and the spirit of man on the planet. It was never designed for this purpose. It was to help man and contribute to his or her physical, emotional, spiritual, and psychic nature. It was to extend energies that would contribute on every level of awareness to every luminous fiber of their being, a power of creative God space. It was to help them remember that through harmonics lies the keys to God manifestation. It was not brought forth for man to dominate or to control others, but to help uplift others so that when the time would be right, that everyone, everywhere could fly free in co-creator God consciousness. Music can be coded. Repeat, music can be coded. It is this reason that we bring you on this day this information about music. There are some songs that have within them harmonics, when heard, that set off a chain reaction among people. Notice what the song We Are the World did to so many around the globe. It was a magnificent feat of accomplishment on many levels of awareness. It carried with it energies of oneness, unity of purpose, and great healing vibrations. Music is definitely the strongest and most powerful common denominator among your people. When used properly and responsibly, it can help transform the entire world. When used improperly, it can contribute to the downfall of man through his search for peace and contentment. Yes, music is universal, but think of it also as being celestial and galactic, and that other advanced life forms also use it in their experiments with other planets. This takes place through a process that you would call coding. Certain combinations of harmonics, when brought together, set forth spirals of invisible energy that can accelerate or deteriorate cellular blood coding in the physical body. Part of the plan of Experiment 3 from the Pleiadians consisted of many factors, one of which had to do with the coding of the blood, which could be empowered or destroyed by harmonic vibrations in certain harmonic states. Not only the Pleiadians, but other species as well, use this method of instructing levels of awareness. Some species have been known throughout the universe to enslave entire planets with the power of vibrational music. This has been considered one of the strongest violations of cosmic law ever devised by co-creator gods. Look at some of the music that is being played today on your planet. Some are degrading to the human spirit and plummet the children of your world into despair and depressional states of existence. Many suicides can now be traced back to destructive vibrational music. Drugs may contribute, but the coding is so precise and is targeted to some carrying certain kinds of blood coding. These beings who have contributed these distortions of vibrational music want to help keep the planet in bondage and away from interstellar commerce with other planets. Think of it as a cosmic chess move to keep Earth from rightly joining other sister planets in the solar system. Yes, Earth is in a kindergarten stage of development and not as advanced as some of the other neighboring planets. It is for that reason that some have volunteered to come to Earth either as a star person, walk-in, or light worker. The need for assistance became well known through the entire galaxy, and millions have joined in this gigantic effort to help planet Earth evolve into a more balanced state. Not only is work being done directly on the grid system in Mother Earth, but strong support is being extended on many levels of awareness to the people. This is one reason that music is such an intricate part of the gigantic balancing procedure. Without the proper vibrational patterns of music, it cannot be done. Know that. Take a long look at that concept. Believe it. It is part of every life form on your planet. One of the reasons that Atlantis was destroyed was because of the misuse of power in many areas, but the misuse of vibrational music contributed heavily to the final decision to wipe Atlantis off the face of the earth, and wiped it was. For thousands of years, it has remained buried under the Atlantic Ocean, with very little physical evidence surfacing to acknowledge the possibility that such a continent even existed. How could such an advanced race of people destroy themselves? What was the contributing factor behind the scrubbing of an entire species? What cosmic law was broken? And who were the souls that lived then? Are they back now? These are some of the questions that we would like those hearing this to ask themselves. If you have lived at that period of time, then what was your contribution to this action? That should raise the hair on the back of your necks, for almost all of you have been connected to Atlantis in one form or another, if not directly, then indirectly through others that you have known and loved on this planet. No one ever really escapes the memories of Atlantis. In the last days of Atlantis, a group of scientists got together and decided that the people should be controlled by vibrational music. A device was engineered to wear on the head. It consisted of quartz crystal, ruby, gold, silver, and copper. Everyone was to wear this device, and if they didn't, then punishment would ensue. It was the theory of the High Council of Elders that Atlantis would become a more productive country if energies could be controlled through orchestrating the people, and certain music was designed to enhance the daily workers that kept all the parts of the country in operation. The people liked the music and looked forward to the new and visualizing vibrational patterns. They didn't mind this kind of control, not really. They felt better and became model citizens, and the growth and advancement was visible. So the practice of wearing the headsets became as normal as everyone wearing clothing. The masses just never thought that the headset they were wearing every day would contribute to the downfall of one of the most advanced civilizations that your planet has ever known. Had they even suspected that it would be turned on them, maybe, just maybe, the story of Atlantis would have been different. When Poseidon became king, who in your present knowing was John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the land of Atlantis was an outpost to some neighboring planets, and many species came to visit Atlantis and its people. It was an experiment of sorts, yes. Just think of it as a huge experiment that got carried away with itself. Poseidon was Pleiadian in blood coding and ruled for a very long time. He was a gracious and kind king, but ruled his people in such a way that they would have laid down their lives for him had he asked it. Later, when he was Abraham Lincoln, he asked it in the war between the North and South. Later, when he was John Kennedy, he asked it for Vietnam. He had many children and was dearly loved by all except one, his oldest, Orpheus Marcus, who is now incarnated as Ronald Reagan, former President of the United States of America. When Poseidon died, Orpheus Marcus took the throne, and it was not his father's wish that he do so. But when Poseidon was poisoned with an extraterrestrial substance, then he had no say about the matter. This poisonous substance had far-reaching effects even after the death of the physical body. The soul experienced explosions of energy similar to magnetic storms of the sun. There is no other way to describe this. Now, more detail about the building and music in Atlantis. The buildings had music coming from the walls. As a person walked on the quartz cobbled streets, the music in the headset would be stimulated by the energies of the quartz in the streets. There was a substance similar to mortar between the quartz stones that would keep the people from getting tired and also help further the coatings of the music. People's dispositions and attitudes were all controlled by vibrational conditioning through music, color, and subliminal brain control. As long as the people were peaceful and happy, everything seemed to be going just fine. When Orpheus Marcus took over, he commissioned some scientists to further their experimentation, and through his lack of discernment and love of power, he helped to destroy all of the good works of his father. Scientists discovered chemicals that would speed up a person's energy pattern and other chemicals that would slow them down. Today, scientists have come close to duplicating these drugs, but not exactly. Orpheus Marcus decided to change a few laws to suit himself and declared that the law of one should be abolished, along with women having any rights whatsoever. He also destroyed the marital system and allowed a man to have more than one wife. He started to destroy within himself first all of his spiritual knowledge and reasoning, and later extended those beliefs to his people. With control of their minds, bodies, and souls, he was able to program an entire race of people the way he wanted them to be. Later, after several years, he started changing the DNA and RNA code of the people and helped to create monsters that were half human and half animal, the things, as they were called. Mutations started to happen with much regularity. Celestial messengers came to warn him of his evil doings. They told him that if he did not reverse his error, that forces would be let loose that would destroy the entire country. This he did not believe, as he was totally consumed with his power and was, by this time, a drug addict and could not be reasoned with at all. Another use for the headsets was of an educational value. People would go to various learning centers for their education. They would enter by using a punch card that would keep records of how many times they visited the learning center. When one would return, he would have to show the card because one could not go there too often. This could cause a mental breakdown if misused. One would simply lay back in a special chair that would align the body to different electromagnetic fields. The headset would be placed with a quartz crystal over the third eye. A disc would be placed in the headset, and music, color, and sounds would enhance the vibrational conditioning of the learning process. This kind of learning was fed at harmonic rates that caused very high levels of awareness to take place. What would take 1 year to learn in reading could be obtained in minutes at this very accelerated rate of comprehension. This is how the education of the people was conducted. After the session was over, the headset would be worn with certain music reaffirming everything that was beamed from the headset earlier. It was through this educational manner that discs were tampered with and the distortions were set in motion. People had given up their will in order for a saner society to develop. Once the will was gone, they were nothing more than robots waiting for instructions or destruction. There were a few that had their wills, and it was through them that a rebellion started. Some left and even went to other countries. Atlantis was an experiment that failed. The perfect society was, in the end, a disgusting, demonic, grotesque misuse of power. All that had participated in this atrocity would have other lessons to learn. Eventually, when the cosmic calendar returned, they would be placed together with the same leaders, same scientists, but with a different script. This is happening now, and as we speak to you this day of your counting. So you see how and why music is so important at this time, especially since thousands of people walk around with Walkmans and headsets on their heads. Music has been composed to destroy the youth of your planet. Know how to recognize this music and when to say no to this music. Know that dark forces will infiltrate your consciousness through this music. Take a stand now and be not a part of composing, writing, distributing, or playing these discords that will help destroy the spiritual nature of mankind. On the other hand, there are some composers that are writing brilliant harmonics and are readily lifting up the spirits of people everywhere. The music of the spheres belongs in another dimension, that is true. And there are those that have access to this dimension now and are bringing forth the celestial messages. And it is signed Navitar. This next chapter was a transmission to Lavendar on December 16th, 1983 in Ruidoso, New Mexico, and the subject is flower essences. One of nature's greatest gifts to humans and animals has been the creation of flowers. The infinite creator designed frequencies to be set forth into each and every flower that would enhance man's and animal's stay on the planet of Earth. Different species of plants came to Earth at different times of man's evolution. As man needed the vibrations, then the celestial forces were put to work to accommodate man to make his stay more pleasurable. There are energies placed in all living things which function within all plant and mineral kingdoms. These energies are called devas or spirit devas. They reside in an etheric form of dimensional manifestation. Lemuria and Atlantis were two places where a great abundance of flowers and spirit devas were present for man's evolutionary process. The Lemurians worked with flowers that resonated to the infinite creator's plan. Each flower had a particular use and function for maintaining harmonious vibration and balance. Many Lemurians used flower essence as a key for communication to higher orders. Some very highly evolved beings decided to reside inside the plants and flowers to help in this communication. It was their intention never to incarnate into human form, but to reside outside of flesh and to maintain the life force of the upspiral creation by passing the laws that were created for man. The Lemurians used flower essences for spiritual growth and for enhancing the physical body with great regenerative powers. There came a time when the Lemurians and the Deva spirits coexisted into the plants and flowers. Some Lemurians advanced spiritually enough to manifest totally into the plants and flowers, and they became the spirit forces of balance. Lemurian flowers were transported to Atlantis, and some new flowers and plants were even created exclusively for the Atlanteans. Flower essences were commonly used in Atlantis for spiritual and physical regeneration also. The flora and fauna of nature were closely watched and monitored by celestial forces, helping to guide the planet into upspiral manifestation. But because of free will, some mad scientists started experimenting with genetic engineering and were successful at crossbreeding some plants that were producing chaotic results. Some of their work got so out of hand that some species had to be completely destroyed or taken off the planet. These mad scientists became obsessed with power and domination of the lower classes. Some plants and flowers were created to break down man's willpower and make him subservient to the ruling class. Drugs were created to stimulate the nervous system and to cause workers to never tire. Then other drugs were administered at night to let them sleep. Uppers and downers were the way of life for the servants of Atlantis, and so it also seems that many today have fallen into that pattern. During the last 30 years of Atlantis, the mad scientists took it upon themselves to create monsters within the plant and animal kingdom. Experimentations of genetic engineering between animals and humans produced a breed later known as the Things. These were pathetic creatures, for they were torn between the human and animal world. Their emotional nature could not be trusted, and so they eventually were destroyed or taken off the planet. An offshoot of these experiments filtered into Egypt, and some of these descendants were depicted as half-man and half-animal. Many Egyptian statues show half-bird, half-man, half-lion, half-man, half-cow, half-man, etc. About the same period of time when the mad scientists were experimenting with plants and animals, another group of scientists had developed ways to use the great crystal. They soon learned how to control the weather by their manipulation of the crystal. A power struggle began even among the scientists, and soon the weather became a chess game. When the balance of nature was disturbed by man's meddling, then the forces of nature banded together and retaliated against the Atlanteans. The flower and plant divas, mineral divas, water divas, and wind god all worked together to destroy the ones who had caused disturbances within the nature of their being. Among the Atlanteans were those of high spiritual nature, and many had learned to communicate with the spirit divas. They learned of the coming disaster, and many left Atlantis in mighty ships by sea and air. In this exodus, they took plants and flowers to other parts of the world for survival. These enlightened Atlanteans also buried coated crystals next to the plants and flowers, and also next to rock structures to help in the balance of the planet. When the upheaval came, thousands upon thousands of spirit divas were saved from destruction. Before the misuse of the Tao Stone, or the Great Crystal, there were high priests that coated crystals with energies and frequencies of perfect balance. It was these crystals that were taken and buried around the world. They helped calm the spirit divas of the plant and mineral kingdom. They also resonated to the crystal pyramidal grid system and ley lines that help keep the magnetic balance of the planet. Because of man's misuse of power during the times of Atlantis, it became necessary to secret away information concerning the spirit diva kingdom. A great treatise came forth, and it was decided by the celestial forces that rule this planet that the mysteries of the diva world would only be revealed at a much later time and only to those who had not misused power in the past. And so it is now that those who once communicated with the divas of the plant and mineral kingdoms are among some of your people on Earth. Some have a natural tendency to communicate with flora and fauna already. Some have not been activated to their purpose as of yet, but it should not be long until their destinies will be revealed to them. There is a great need at this time for these people to be awakened to their natural ability to communicate with nature, for a calling has gone out once again to help bring balance between nature and man. These mediators of nature can help bridge the gap between nature spirits and man. Some have walked in during the November 17, 18, 19 period in order to set up systems of activation for these beings to be awakened to their missions. It is now important for starseeds, walk-ins, and light workers to learn the art of communication with the divas of nature. This art must also be taught to the New Age children, for it will be up to them to help keep the planet in balance after the Earth changes. These children must be taught every aspect of nature. First, the reverence and respect of the diva kingdoms must be understood by all who reside on the planet. After the Earth changes, it will not be too hard to explain it to them. Now is the time to find the right flower essence and combinations of flower essences to help activate those on the planet referred to as starseed, walk-ins, and lightworkers. This will help set up vibrations that will help them remember who they are and why they are here. It will calm their emotional nature and free them from old negative earth programming that has kept them in bondage for so long. It will strengthen their mind, body, and spirit toward a greater balance for the whole. Remember that every day that flower essence as well as gem elixirs are taken, then initiation of the spirit is at hand. Go now and produce these things that your mind and heart knows to be true. Take the crystals that were activated and coded by the genies of the Great Pyramid and distribute them to those that need additional help in activation. Also, plant crystals at the base of trees, granite rocks, streams, lakes, or any place where balance needs to be. Though tiny in size, each have been coated with energy's 7 million times celestial power. You have not yet a machine on Earth with which to measure such stones. Once a crystal is planted, it will resonate and become like your domino theory. These tiny crystals will represent the balancing beam between nature and man. So be it. And, of course, this reference is to the Giza crystals that were taken by Lavendar into the Great Pyramid during Pleiadian lineup of November 17, 18, 19 of 1983. I'd also like to add a footnote to these chapters from the vault, and that is that for tens of thousands of years, Atlantis was the greatest civilization on Earth in balance, and it just was towards the end that things got so out of hand. So there are a lot of Atlanteans who are back today, and the code is never again Atlantis. Just remember that. We have two more short little pieces from the vault for you this evening. The first one kind of goes with music and flower essences, and this is The Color Spectrum, Other Dimensions. This was written by Lavendar on January 16, 1986, on the island of Aruba. Everything, without exception, on planet Earth is comprised of color, light, and sound. The harmonics of these extends the manifestation of rainbow colors. These rainbow colors can be demonstrated when the prism of light is focused through water, mist, or crystal. Earth is primarily a projection of 7 color rays: red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. These colors function within the third dimension spectrum. All modes of life are in synchronization with these 7 color rays. During the age of Leo, when the continent of Atlantis was destroyed, a quarantine was placed around the planet of Earth. It became apparent that dimensional windows had been shut and communication was terminated from other life forms that resided in other dimensions. The law of change and flexibility of dimensions no longer applied to the third dimension. The cosmic quarantine established this manifestation. A celestial transmission was sent and formed a coded, locked, third-dimensional energy. This was closely monitored by the hierarchy that had been responsible for the cosmic quarantine. This was established to ensure a certain period of time for the inhabitants of Earth to experience a series of spiritual lessons based upon third-dimensional cosmic laws. Harmonics were established through color, light, and sound to match this third dimensional manifestation. It was decided by the council members that not all beings on the planet would be bound by the quarantine. Special dispensation was given to 144,000 light beings to keep within their soul patterns memories of other dimensions and the coded harmonics of traveling through time and space. These light beings held within their blood crystals the coatings of entrances and exits of dimensional travel. Also, they held and still hold the resonating points and entire blueprints of evolution that one day will bring the planet Earth back to its original position before the destruction of Atlantis. It is through the teachings and instructions of these 144,000 that each and every zodiacal age were consummated and recorded upon Earth's records. The age of Aquarius has now approached, which is the opposite of Leo, and the time has come for Earth to be released from the cosmic quarantine and to function in co-creator space with other dimensions and other planets within the universe. The August Harmonic Convergence, August 15th through the 20th of 1987, brought forward a planetary alignment that not only reactivates the original 144,000 light beings, but also their offspring, through bloodline transference of crystalline-coded measures. These beings will hold resonating fields of electro-biomagnetic energies that will help the planet and its people to move in symphony with the harmonics of the spheres. The harmonics of color will be experienced with intensified recollections of memory traces, and colors may extend into other dimensional windows. Other dimensions have other harmonic systems based on varied colors. These colors are not demonstrated in the third dimension. Light beings of other dimensional species travel on these waves of frequency. All dimensions have different light, sound, and color velocity. Space travel, whether it be from planet or dimension, depends on the use of different color codes infused with light harmonics resonating on the wave factor. The original 144,000 hold the key codes on planet Earth concerning Earth's inhabitants venturing to other planets and dimensions. Their instructions and teachings regarding dimensional light color rays and the proper use of harmonics will help Earth and its inhabitants to travel to other star systems. There is a code of traveling referred to as hyperspace, which jumps, not goes through, dimensions. By this process, beings from far-reaching galaxies can visit other galaxies as fast as the speed of thought. One of the main principles of space travel is based upon crystal light rays that interlock with these harmonic waves, and without crystal, hyperspace travel would not be possible. There are many crystals, especially those from Arkansas, that have been coded to all colors of all planets and dimensions within this Cosmic Planning Commission. These crystals have been activated as planetary harmonics and will interlace varied color codings. Some coded crystals will act as laser lights of spiraling energy, pulling in from other dimension color codes of different evolutionary patterns. The distribution of these crystals around the world has helped not only the energy vortex of Earth, but helped bring balance back between man and nature. The tiny Giza crystals that have now circled the globe many times also hold within them the resonating frequencies of the 1987 August Harmonic Convergence. Those who helped in their distribution have received balancing beams. No machine has yet been invented to measure this kind of crystalline frequency. Let it be known that harmonic honor will resonate to every participant who helped in this global crystal distribution. The next piece, written by Lavendar, is about taking your power. This was written on August 19th, 1986, and you may have noticed that nearly all of the writings that I have we have shared with you this evening were written on star dates. So this subject is taking your power. Taking your power through personal expression remains linear third-dimensional manifestation. When one has power over things, objects, collective subconscious emotional desire to have power over things, then consciousness remains earthbound. Taking your power through cosmic understanding brings forth God manifestations, unlimited in expression, powers that can create worlds or destroy them, depending upon the intent of the will of manifestation. The test of power comes to those ready and capable of taking their power. Tests created by the entity before birth, many wait to come to the earth just for the test and lesson of power. Nowhere else can the polarity expressions exist in such duality as this planet. The tests are varied, power struggles in family units, community units, country units, etc. The test of power takes many souls through many lifetimes to have experiences in all kinds of power plays. The ultimate test for mastership of godhood is a simple one, but one that many overlook. place no energy through thought or physical action that would interrupt nature's way of being. Only through complete union with nature can godhood be achieved from the earth plane. Right use of power determines when ascension takes place, then one will have the force of power. Take power and make it a part of the symphony played by the celestial messengers and bodies of harmonic vibrations. The misuse of power has been the only factor in the destruction of other planets. Right use of will or divine right action was neither followed or declared valid when the final stroke of fate took over a planet by the misuse of power. In relation to that piece, here is another one written May 18, 1986 on the island of Aruba, and this is Relations About Power, written by Lavendar. In order to gain power, sometimes one has to lose it. When power is given and taken away with the stroke of celestial precision, then it becomes a gift from the gods. When power is attained from a god or goddess state of awareness and maintained in proper balance, it is no longer a gift from the realms that rule this earth. Instead, it is a way of acknowledging equal status of the greatest creative power known in this universe. The only one that can take it away is the one in charge of his or her own power, which is connected to every celestial program in the heavens. Without this kind of awareness and acknowledgement of intent, many will come and go through the wheel of power. Some will take this power and wield it for themselves in selfish actions, while others will wield this energy into energies that will unselfishly help the freedom of every soul everywhere and beyond. So let the lesson for today be, in order for one to take their power, they must unselfishly empower someone else and learn from every aspect what it means to use and misuse any power mode at any level of manifestation. How many of you can take your power and stand toe-to-toe, eye-to-eye, with any god or goddess in the universe? Thought for the week. So, Lavendar, thank you for allowing me to present your material, Chapters from the Vault. And now, back to you, Lavendar.
Wow. I must say it's been a long time since I have seen that material or read it. In fact, as I was listening to it, I went, you know, I just don't remember writing that. I must have a new walk-in.
Well, you've written so much, and you have experienced so much in your lifetime. And what is amazing to me is how far ahead you've always been. I mean, you learned about walk-ins in 1977 before anybody's books came out on the subject. So you've always been ahead of the curve.
Well, that's because you're
I was always in. About two steps away from a straitjacket, too. You've got to remember that.
Anastasia, what were you saying?
I just said it's because she's been so profoundly in tune with beneficial sources. And I loved all of this, but the discussion of power is just a wonderful way to end that tonight, because I think about that a lot, how power is misused in the world and how we each are challenged to not only learn our power, but then to use it. And it really is one big wheel of testing. Lavendar, that is just sheer truth. All of it was truth, but the part about power really touches me. And I think it's really relevant for all of us now, as we work with our growth and development and moving to the next level. So many of us fail to understand that that really is a condition of being in the cosmic game and, being a galactic player, as it were. And so many of us are tested about this subject all the time without even being aware of it. And you say you don't remember writing it, but I find that people that are truly inspired, they're in an altered state, this stuff comes through divinely guided, and of course you don't remember. Plus, as Ariel has said, you've written so many things. And you certainly, I know from knowing you personally, how deeply this has become a part of you. You know, this is truth in every cell of your body, and you practice it and you live it all the time. So when you hear the words, it may sound like somebody else wrote it, because it's become so much a part of you, you don't see it. And so I just think that's beautiful, and I love that, and I'll be thinking about that. It's, you know, we can know these things, but when we hear the words, it helps us reprocess, reframe, reform, put it into new ideas. The mind needs to be active in our learning. We need to think. In fact, some great person once said that we should spend, 10 minutes reading something and 2 hours thinking about it. We need to think more than we talk, and we need to think strongly about these kinds of things that you've taught us about tonight, because the more you plummet, the more you learn. And when you do that, I'll be quiet here in a second, but when you do that, it opens up your consciousness to your own divine inspiration and guidance, because we can all be plugged in this way. And through love, through setting the ego aside, which, Lavendar, would you comment briefly about, if you could, where the ego comes into this whole power play thing? In our human nature, how we struggle against that and may not recognize it within ourselves.
I think it's real important to have a healthy ego.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that to have a healthy ego, you need to be balanced in all your 12 time zones of your chart. You should be able to stand out of polarity in each one of the time zones, whether it's money or marriage or relationship or family, to always be able to make the wise decisions in speech and in action in order to stay true to power.
Mm-hmm. Have you written about that? That sounds like something that should be written down.
You know what? I might have.
That's some good stuff right there. That's really good stuff.
It's about the 12 time zones. It is.
Mm-hmm.
It's about,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you take the wheel, the astrological wheel, I'll just go around the wheel. Okay. In the first house, it's how you present yourself to the world. Your second house is your money and possessions. Your third house is communications. And at short distance trips, your fourth house is home, your base, your roots of operation. Your fifth house is children and things that you create. Sixth house is, and also movies and entertainment and holidays. Sixth house is daily work and health. And seventh house is marriage and partnership and open enemies and legal aspects. Eighth house is sex, death, regeneration, probate, other people's money, and perhaps large investments or corporate America. Ninth house is long-distance travel and foreigners and publishing and the higher mind philosopher. Of all religions. 10th house is your career, how you present your work to the world. 11th house is your hopes, wishes, and dreams. That's kind of the place I'm finding where people are starting to connect with their soul groups. No astrologers really talked about the 11th house being soul groups and soul contracts, but I'm finding that. 12th house are things that are hidden, prisons, hospitals, the subconscious, the superconscious, things that you just keep secreted away. The archaeology and detective work is there. So all of those 12 things that I just mentioned, how you display your power in each one of those areas is what determines the karmic effects that start happening, the chain reaction of cause and effect. So when you stand really firm and don't get in polarity with it, you don't create any karma that's going to be reflected in another time and space. See, it's
wow.
Like you have to stop the pendulum swing.
Sure.
In those areas.
Absolutely.
And what that also means is that if you can stay out of polarity, meaning remain neutral and don't you know, when you stand with your sword drawn, then you're going to attract opposition.
Right.
And as you set up all these different things karmically, then yes, you, when you come back, you have to play them out. And basically, after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, and you've got all of these issues that were established through polarity, in that way, you have given away your power to these situations, people, places, events, and one by one, we have to reclaim the power that we've given away by releasing our involvement in those situations and just either, I mean, you could kind of look at it as just surrendering. It's like, okay, fine, just walk away and take back your power from that situation, because we spread ourselves so thin that we find ourselves powerless because we have given away, you know, because you're so attached to something or some position, some opinion, the need to be right.
Is just describing the world at large. And well, it would be wonderful if this were taught to children and part of our education. People everywhere need to know this. This is the way to live your life. And
well, I'm sure
Buddhist.
That it will be taught in some of these places that are being established now for the new children. It has to be. It's you know, our school system is so screwed up that, you know, of course, all that's designed so that you'll go to work and pay taxes and be a drone.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And there has
I'd like
to be a freedom, you know, from that.
I'd like to see you write about that, and that would be a, maybe a show unto itself, because that's all really important stuff.
And but, you know, truth is your best protection. When you stand in truth of your being, not truth in a belief system, but truth in your knowing, then there's something about claiming your power at that moment, because, and there's a saying that I say quite often, and I've been saying it a lot to a lot of my clients lately, and if I offend anyone out there, you know, too bad, here it goes. you couldn't have me then, and you can't have me now. And once you do that, you claim your power. And that goes for anything that's trying to intrude upon your sovereignty of spirit. Couldn't have me then, and you can't have me now.
And I think that's so critical right now, because it is about the consumption of energy and where people are giving themselves over to constantly. And with my clients, Lavendar, the same. I find that powerlessness is probably the biggest struggle, that people don't recognize their power and are actually conditioned to give it away. From the time we're babies, we're taught to give that away.
Yeah.
So it's a whole new paradigm of consciousness to just shift that much and to recognize sovereignty. And that goes back to the subject you brought up earlier about freedom and a shift in a movement towards being free is connected to accepting your personal power, not giving that away. And then bringing it into balance into all phases of your life and how you interact with others and the material reality. And I loved what you said about using power to do, you know, help other, empower other people, which is something that we should be consistently doing. Those of us that are stronger need to empower our, you know, brothers and sisters everywhere, because it's needed and we need to share that. And that's how we lift ourselves up globally, don't you think?
Well, and every session that I have with anyone, it's always about me finding in their charts and also in their soul records the place where I can just zip their credit card to their soul and bring it front and center and say, it's time to take this back now. You've accomplished so many good things in past lives. You need to claim that.
Well, you bet, and that's just so wonderful. That just lifts me right up, just talking about that. It's beautiful stuff.
Yeah.
Do we have any callers, Ariel?
Yes. I was just about to say that now. We're opening the switchboard for callers. If you have a comment or a question, you need to press 1 on your keypad so that we know that you have something to say. And we do have a question coming in just a moment here, as soon as I get that mic open, from Tammy. Hey, girl.
Hey there. This is just the best show. I've written 2 pages of information, starting with information about the alignment, what great tools we can take from that. I'm going to use it in my sessions in the next few weeks. Just thank you for that astrological information. And my question is about the Atlantean healing chambers. Lavender, do you think that there was a combination of the harmonics, color, and essence in these, or did they just stick with one particular mode of healing?
Oh, they had so many different combinations. They had invented a new way to manufacture quartz crystal, and it was able to hold so many different frequencies, and they decided to build their buildings out of it and their streets out of it, and it hooked it, everybody up to it, to where everybody was like a hive mind. And they infused it with color and flowers, whatever. See, for a long time, it was done in ways to enhance and empower the creativity of everyone involved. Not until the energies turned did it become destructive. Like everything, it was the misuse of power of that particular crystalline vibration.
So the crystals that they manufactured, were they part of the misuse?
Yes, they were.
Wow, this show has just lit me up on so many things. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I'm speechless. I'm going to have to get off right now.
Okay. And thank you so much for calling, and thank you, Tammy, for the work you do. And I've had so many wonderful comments on my emails from people that have had sessions with you, and they're telling me you're the real deal. And I email them back, and I said, yep, I know that. That's why we had her on the show. So if anyone's listening has not heard the show that we did, 2 weeks ago, with you, Tammy, go back and listen to it and see if it would interest you at all to have a session with Tammy.
Well, thank you. And is it okay if I ask one more question?
Sure.
All right. When we were in France, we sang Amazing Grace down in one of the sacred spots. Do you believe, in Lavender, you know the family?
I knew the granddaughter of the person that wrote Amazing Grace. I met her in Georgia.
You know, I think that song holds a special harmonic.
Absolutely.
I can't hold a key singing. Can't hold a note, but that song seems to me that everyone can sing it right. You know, hold the tune. I know that's one song that I'm not embarrassed to sing, where I felt like I can sing it. And I think it's because of the harmonics and the frequency that it holds.
Well, and I know that when Ariel sang it, when we were, you know, over there in those cathedrals and in the caves, that, I mean, the vibration of that song as she sang it, it reverberated into the rocks, into the trees, into the ground, and I was noticing that it traveled much further than where we were standing.
Yep. Yeah, and I was a little bit nervous standing in that circle. I think I was next to Ariel, one of the greatest set of starseed resonant pipes on the planet, and I still just sang, not being able to carry a tune, and I just, you know, I feel it's the energy of that song, because not many songs would I sing out loud, because I'm tone deaf in that area.
Well, something just grabbed a hold of you and fixed it.
Well, yeah, but I think it's the, do you think it's once again that gift of that resonance of that song?
Yeah, I think it's a combination. Yeah, I do. I used to have more of a history of how that song was written, but through the years I've forgotten what she told me about how it was written.
When that happened in France, that was one of the most special moments for me, because Ariel's voice does just it's an activator.
It lifts your spirit from wherever you are. That's true.
It definitely does.
You're
so
a spirit lifter, Ariel.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
I always loved
that song.
And I think it's time for more of your music to come out to activate. I know what it does for me personally.
Well,
hopefully we'll have more.
I had on a show that we did, I guess maybe 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. The show is called The Birth of Starseed Hotline. I played a lot of my music on that show, so if you want to go back and listen, it's there for you.
Yep, that was a treat. And hint, hint, nudge, nudge. Hopefully there's more shows where we get...
Okay, Richard just told me the story about the man who wrote Amazing Grace. He was a captain on a ship, on a slave ship, and he felt so badly about what was happening with the slaves on the ship that he wrote that song.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what Richard just told me. Yeah.
Thank you, Richard.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Tammy. Do you have any other question or comment?
No, I just hope that I can sleep tonight, because this has just got my brain cranking. I'm pacing with this information. I'm writing it into sessions. And yes, thank you. Thank you for all you share and all you do.
Well, thank you. You know, we love you.
Love you, too.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, well, we are going to go now to our next caller, and we're going to talk to Ralph. Hello, Ralph.
Hello. How are you tonight?
Great.
Just a plethora of different information tonight, just a wide range of things to cover. But I had a question going way back, if we don't mind, to the beginning of the show. I think Anastasia, I think, gave this information out. And she was talking about, or maybe not, but anyway, whoever it was, mentioned something about the fact that Jesus Christ was not only married, well, he's married, but he also had children. There's actually a bloodline there and so forth. What came to me was what the real significance that information is going to play here as we... proceed this year with the belief system on the planet for a large number of people in their religion. What impact that's going to have, and how things are going to shift as a result of that type of knowledge being disseminated worldwide, and becoming kind of taken in and maybe becoming popular and accepted?
Well, I think that's absolutely right. It's going to help with the shift, most definitely.
The thought that comes to me is religion is busted.
That's right. And even statistics are showing that more and more people are dropping out of traditional Christianity, and there, you know, we see a big surge in maybe in certain political parties toward the extreme fundamentalist right. We see that in all of the major religions. The Abrahamic religions all are tending toward extremism, but it's the middle that it gets ignored, and in the middle there are many people that are dissatisfied and are looking elsewhere, and are beginning to seek out alternatives. And this is where we will see the most impact. The extremists will reject and deny and whatever, but among those that are still open and are truly seeking, this will be another piece that will begin to sway them towards opening their mind to alternative history, alternative reality, the historical Jesus, and possibilities that perhaps what they've been told is not exactly accurate. So it's very significant.
It kind of, to answer your question, also another perception is that back when everyone thought the world was flat and that the universe, the stars, the sun rotated around the earth, everybody believed that. And then, you know, one man said, well, I don't think so. And there was a huge division, but eventually the truth will surface. The truth will come out. It must be revealed. And I think that right now the energy of Mary Magdalene is very active on the planet as a messenger, a deliverer of the reassertion of the divine feminine on the planet. And accepting Mary Magdalene as the wife of Jesus and the mother of his children is part of the truth coming out and the release of thousands of years of the divine feminine being denied, repressed, maligned. And it must happen for the golden age to occur. There has to be a balance between masculine and feminine. And I really think that Mary Magdalene is playing a large role in that. And I have to say that when we were at Rennes-le-Château in France, I took a picture. I thought the cloud was interesting. And when I got it home and I looked at it, I started hyperventilating because the picture was clearly an angel with a skull on her right hand, and that is in all of the historical depictions and statues and sculptures around Mary Magdalene, she always has the skull because it represents John the Baptist. So, and I really, when I saw that picture, I knew that Mary Magdalene has a message, and she's working through many people, many starseeds, to help reassert and reestablish the divine feminine on the planet. So that's my two cents.
You think the this kind of, well, the way I look at it is the upsetting of the apple cart is going to happen between now and 1221?
Well, I'd just like to say that, and Arielle, that was very beautifully spoken. Wow, that was great, what you just said.
Well, thank you.
And you know, you're so right about the flat Earth theory, but, you know, we have to also maybe remember Galileo, who in, you know, 1633 was persecuted because he discovered that the Earth revolves around the sun. Well, it took 200 years before the Catholic Church took the writings of Galileo from its banned book list. And it took 360 years for the church to admit its error. So, admittedly, we are in accelerated times, but it's unlikely, in my way of thinking, that it's going to happen by 1221. I think that the established, entrenched philosophies are very established and very entrenched. However, when we look into the acceleration of time and the acceleration of consciousness, we certainly hope it won't take 360 years for things to shift. So I think we're looking at rapid shift, but I don't think it's, my personal opinion is it probably won't be quite that rapid.
I agree.
Well, there is one thing that occurred to me when I read about the 1960 Pluto square Uranus, and it talked about Twilight Zone, Star Trek, those things that came out on our TV and movies, is that now that it's come back again, it's going to make it real. It's about disclosure. It's about the ETs. It's about what's happening on the planet with all these bloodline experiments. And it's about our technology being able to capture it on video everywhere. I mean, I can't believe that I turn now to different cable stations, and every day there's something on a cable station called UFOs on Earth, the last captured video of a UFO. I mean, you can, if you have like 300 channels and you're surfing, they're just everywhere.
Right.
They're everywhere.
Mm.
So it's like, okay,
it's true. It's happening. Yeah, and I don't think it's going to happen by the end of the year, but the seeds have already been planted.
Yeah.
And there's no turning back.
Yeah, that's
and,
it.
You
there's
know,
no turning back.
And
yeah.
what you, that's right. Once it's in there, you can't take it out. And one of the things that what you said about the divine feminine was so right on, because there's a very brilliant Gnostic scholar out there by the name of John Lash, who is extremely brilliant, and he equates the divine feminine to the goddess Sophia, which he feels is the embodiment of the divine feminine in the planet herself as a conscious goddess. And when we look at Mary Magdalene as an archetype of the divine feminine, in tandem with Gaia Sophia emerging into her galactic status, the ascension of the planet in that way, it's all connected. But you're so right about the need for the return of the feminine and bringing all of that into balance. It's been so severely, precipitously out of balance, and we're seeing all of that culminating now with wars and crises of every kind across the planet as the old struggles to maintain, you know, it's in its death throes, and things will get interesting before it collapses and comes back into balance. The pendulum has to swing the other way. As Lavendar said, we have to be in alignment with nature to survive, and nature is always seeking balance. Humanity struggles with that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, it is about
so
the
true.
Restoration of the feminine in tandem with the divine masculine, and that's what the Jesus Magdalene story is really all about. It's
Absolutely.
Not so much about two people. It's an archetype of the divine masculine and feminine throughout existence and within us, and our need to return to that and honor that in each other and within ourselves.
It's completely right. So, Ralph, I want to thank you so much. That was a great question and stimulated some great thoughts in response and gives everyone something to think about. So thanks for calling in, Ralph.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. Oh, we have one more caller, or two more callers with a question, so we're going to try to be concise here. We're going to talk to Mary next. Hello, Mary.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
You have a question?
Yes, I do. First of all, the whole discussion is fascinating, so thank you so much for so many inspiring topics. I had a question about harmonics in healing, I guess for Lavendar. I have been told that Archangel Gabriel is wanting to work with me to, develop harmonics-based healing, and I wondered if she had any comments on that.
All the interactions I've ever had in this lifetime with Gabriel really doesn't have anything to do with healing. He's one of big, huge transformational energy. I'm surprised that you're saying Gabriel, because there's other archangels that line up for that more than he does. You know, when Gabriel blows his horn, things happen. You know, whenever he was the one that was in Sodom and Gomorrah. He's the one that goes around. He's a huge messenger. He's one that's really tied up to, you know, bringing big transformational energy. So if he's been, soliciting you, then you're in for a ride.
Well, and I am working with what's called Trinity energy, and it is healing, but more importantly, energy of completion and of ascension and much more transformation, with kind of healing as a subset to that. So maybe that's what you're referring to.
Okay. I'm just telling you what my past experience has been working with him, and I know that he was the one that took the Ayatollah off the planet several years ago, and I got to witness him doing that.
Really?
He's a very big, powerful dude.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Well, I mean, there is a transformation in the way healing is approached and the way harmonics are being used, And you know, I just wish that when you find out more about that, that you'll call back in and let us know.
I sure will, because I can't wait to find out myself.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Mary.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Could it also be that perhaps healing in not every instance is gentle? Sometimes it's very jolting.
Yeah, nobody said what it was going to look like.
Right, exactly.
Right. Okay, we have, we have another caller with a question. This is Teresa.
Hi.
Teresa, hello.
Hi, this is Bree from New York. Hi, Lavender. I'm calling, I just want to add it to the prior caller in terms of the Mary Magdalene energy and Jesus Christ in terms of the architect and how humanity is really the masculine feminine energy is represented as an archetype with starting with Adam and Eve. And working with Mac Benedicte in the quantum vortex healing, I held one of the energy in me as an Eve, a section of the energy, I guess, of Eve, in holding the space for Adam to come back from the shadow. And it's been doing that so that we, humanity, can, cross onto the bridge and just to see the light onto the 5D Earth. So I just wanted to share that energy is really more and more light workers or star seeds are coming in and learning from that quantum vortex healing. So, and I thank you, Lavender, for sending me to Meg Benedict. That was very nice.
Well, you know, we're going to have her on the show next Tuesday.
Yes, I know. I just did a 12-week course with her as a quantum vortex in terms of Tet Zepi, which is the ancient Egyptian alchemy. So she just did one of her first class, you know, with lots of star seeds all over the earth. So everybody's going through now. She's starting her second class. So it's very powerful coming through.
Yeah, it's great.
Helping to
good
raise.
Good to hear
yeah.
from you.
Thank you, Lavender. Good to hear you guys are moving as well. I haven't had a chance to listen to you guys like I was doing with Meg Benedicte because she has a talk show radio as well, but, you know, with the class, but amazing stuff. And just learning about the masculine feminine energy and holding that because the feminine energy has been so, you know, in the shadow, but she was still holding on there. Now she has to come back up and lift all of that. Despair throughout the eons and eons that she was holding for, because what I understood was they went after Eve because they could, they went after Eve, but they couldn't get her. She was very powerful in the feminine energy, so they went after Adam. And then all she could do was hold a space for him to come back, and he is coming back. So, anyway, better share that.
Okay, well, you can always go back on our archives and hear the shows you've missed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
And be sure to tune in next week because Meg Benedicte will be our guest, and we just love her and love the work that she does. So thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye
bye.
Bye.
Okay. I think we're going to have one more caller. We only have a few like 5 minutes left. So as soon as our switchboard host is done, we will have a question from, okay, we're ready to go. From Joan, hello, welcome.
Hi, this is Joanne.
Oh, Joanne, sorry.
That's okay. I have a question about harmonics dealing with composers. I was wondering if Lavendar had any thoughts about if there will be some sort of different way harmonics are taught versus the Western kind of traditional way harmonics have been taught in the past.
Well, there are star children that have been born on the planet. A lot of them came in the 80s, and so we're starting to see some of them now. you know, they're in their late 20s, and they're really starting to bring forth a lot of beautiful music. And others will be coming. And the ones that will be coming will be really responsible for the harmonics that will be placed in musical tone, whether it be through any instrument or through voice. So we have a great many that have been born here. We also have a lot of Pleiadian walk-ins that are bringing the information about toning, and like the crystal bowls and, you know, the harmonics, the different technologies like the wands, all kinds of things are being presented so that people will be able to help attune themselves. And the most destructive thing that I see now, I don't know whether anybody else has been noticing it, but over television, there is a music that they want to play, some sound, I can't call it music, and it's happening on the background of sports, horse racing. The commentator is trying to talk, and behind there is just a bang, 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 and just all kinds of weird noise. And it's almost to the point of you want to just stick your foot through the TV screen because it just gets so obnoxious. Has anybody else noticed that?
I haven't noticed it so much on because I don't watch the sports shows, but yeah, television music is very rarely anything that's going to help us.
I have actually discontinued my cable access for that very reason. I don't have a television. And I will tell you that the frequency in my home improved immensely just by disconnecting from that.
Can't hear you. Speak up.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I was saying that I had actually disconnected my cable access to improve the frequency in my home. And I tell you that it really did. Once I unplugged from cable television, I've really noticed a difference in frequencies in the house because I could even feel the frequency with the TV set off. And when I go visit someone that has the television on, I can't stand it because the energy coming out of the box is awful. And a lot of it is done with music.
Yeah.
Or noise.
Noise. Just noise.
Mm-hmm. And this just puts people to sleep. It really puts people to sleep. You know, we have enough to contend with. To keep our frequencies up and to stay aligned and to do the work without assaulting ourselves with the things that they want to assault us with, so we'll go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's the sounds that you don't hear.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And any time the set's flashing, you watch a movie where there's a lot of flashing and a lot of loud noise, it's a time to look away. People, that's the point where, you know, something's going on. There's some programming occurring. So we really need to be careful about watching that tube and listening to it.
Let me tell you another thing that happens. I have a DVR, so I fast forward all the commercials. I like to look away when I'm fast forwarding the commercials because all those codes are coming in really quick and fast.
Absolutely. Yeah. Everybody out there needs to be aware of that. Be careful what you watch
and listen to because that really
affects.
It's part of retaking and reclaiming your power. Because we give it away in so many little ways, just like watching TV. We don't even know, don't even realize.
Well, that's so true. That's
you know?
So absolutely right on.
It is.
By the way, last week on Perception, the whole show was about something called the Pleiades.
yeah, I saw that. Well, ladies, we only have a minute left, so we need to wrap this up. I want to, first of all, thank Lavendar so much for all the work that is represented in your vault, and thank you for allowing me to present that material today. Thank you to all of the listeners for coming back each week. Our listener base, people that are listening, is growing every week, and that's really a wonderful feeling for us. So we thank you for that, and on behalf of all of our Starseed team from Lavendar, Anastasia, Chris, Tammy, Rose, Sahar, Belva, and myself, we thank you for listening. And don't forget, next week is Meg Benedict Day. So, good night, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope to be with you soon in the other worlds. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.